AEW promised the fans barbed wire everywhere tonight. That was the big main event, Chris Jericho and Eddie Kingston one-on-one, big grudge match, which ended up being an overbooked mess. In fact, I thought that on the whole, this show outside of the first two segments was kind of a mess overall. And it's really too bad because I did enjoy the opener. I did enjoy Darby Allin and Brody King went out there. They had a classic squash, but not a squash in the way that you would think where the other guy gets no offense. And they told a story in that match. Darby Allin is out of his mind, but you already knew that. And I enjoyed it, though. I thought it was very effective. And FTR delivered another promo that I think should be shown by every wrestling coach, every wrestling trainer, at every wrestling school about how to promote a match, how to sell a match. Tonight, it was all about promoting the 2 out of 3 falls match on the Ring of Honor pay-per-view this weekend between FTR and the Briscoes. The Briscoes have never made a single appearance on an episode of AEW Dynamite. It was just FTR out in the ring. It was their job to sell you on the match. I thought they did a better job of selling people on the Tag Team Championship match this weekend than they did the Ring of Honor World Heavyweight title match. Because we have a world title match and we have a tag team title match. And when this show was over tonight, it felt like the tag team title match, that's the real main event. But I actually thought, all things considered, that Tony Khan did a pretty good job of promoting the Ring of Honor pay-per-view tonight. It may have come at the expense, though, of putting on a very good episode of Dynamite. This was not one of my more favorite shows. This was night 3 of Fighter Fest. This is your AEW Dynamite review for Wednesday, July 20th, 2022. I am the Solemn Monster. It's Shark Week. You know, we just had a shark, actually a great white, wash up dead on one of the beaches out on Long Island somewhere. So that's one way to ring in Shark Week, I guess. How would you like to be sitting on the beach building a sandcastle and you look over and there's Jaws staring you back in the face? I'd probably shit myself right there on the beach and then I would just kind of put some sand over it and let the next kid who comes by discover the little gift I left for them. Hit that like button. Super chats are open, as is customary around here. I will be reading all of your messages. If you have questions, if you want to send them on in, please do so. I do appreciate that. And if you would like to become a channel member, you can see the join button down below. That is the place to go for all the information. Also, you'll see in the social media links on the bottom, we now have, and you'll see it pinned in the chat as well. There is a TikTok. It's actually been set up for a while, but I've only first started posting content on there, so now we're first trying to build something over there. So go follow us on TikTok, and I had a couple of people ask about the mug. The Sound Off mug right here. If you would like to, there is a link. You can get mugged. Just go to thesolemnmonster.com. Right on the bottom, you'll see it says Get Mugged. It'll take you right to the product page, and you can drink from the same cup that I drink out of when you see me on all the streams here. So what's going on, guys? I should probably say hello to everybody. Thank you for choosing me for your Dynamite coverage. Sometimes there are great Dynamites, sometimes there are good Dynamites, and sometimes there's a little bit of everything. And I feel like tonight is one of those nights where there was some good stuff, but there was also some stuff that just made me shake my head. And I will not hold this episode up as one of the better episodes of the year. But I will hold this opener up as one of the more enjoyable openers that I've seen. Dynamite tonight opened with a grudge match between Darby Allin and, you like all the barbed wire everywhere, for those of you who are live in the chat watching the video version, I did, yeah, you got to fit the theme of the night, right? They said barbed wire everywhere. So I said, you got to have, I told Steve, I said, you got to give me as much barbed wire as you possibly can. Let's get all the barbed wire around me here. And I think he did a fine job, and shout out to Steve Mello for all of his great work. The grudge match between Brody King and Darby Allin was set up, really, if you go back to the Royal Rampage a few weeks ago when Brody King won the Battle Royal to get the interim championship match with Jon Moxley. The last person that he eliminated in that Battle Royal was Darby Allin. And then they shot an angle at a mall somewhere, I think it was at a Hot Topic or something, where Darby was doing a signing and Brody King attacked him and then powerbombed him through a table right in the middle of the store. And so that led to where we were here tonight, one-on-one. This is the same Brody King, by the way, who will be challenging Jacob Fatu for the House of Glory World Championship. We're going to crown our first Hog World Champion in, I believe, 3 years. It's been a very long time. And we now know what the final match of the tournament is going to be next month at Terminal 5. It's going to be Brody King. It's going to be Jacob Fatu. He won't be able to manhandle Jacob Fatu the way that he manhandled Darby Allin on this show tonight. I can promise you that. But he beat this guy up like, I said this on Twitter, he beat this guy up tonight like he owed him money. The way he was beating Darby Allin up tonight, it was like Darby fucked his wife. He walked in on them and Darby was doing some kind of weird position and he just snapped. The way that he was absolutely ragdolling this man all around the ring. It was, at moments, it was uncomfortable to watch at times. But uncomfortable in a good way. Uncomfortable in a good way. I like the fact that even though Brody lost to Jon Moxley a few weeks ago, it would have been very easy for him to just sort of fade into the background. But they're making the attempt to really keep him strong. And he came out of this thing looking like Godzilla when this match was over. Darby really was, in a lot of ways, I think, the perfect opponent for him because he could throw him around in ways that he couldn't do to a bigger opponent. Darby can sell all of his offense and make it look like he's getting killed out there. And some of the bumps that he took, I wouldn't be surprised if Darby did come near death here in this match because he is absolutely out of his mind. And he pays no attention to his own physical well-being. To him, it's all about just going out there and making it look as realistic as possible. And based on what we saw tonight, constantly falling on the back of your head. There was a lot of that in this match, too. But I thought this was perfect. King just toyed with him. He was flinging him all over the ring like he was a small child. They went into the first picture-in-picture break. And the first thing in the picture-in-picture that we see is a commercial for Shark Week. And who do I see in the commercial? It is Dwayne The Rock Johnson. So The Rock made his unofficial Dynamite debut tonight. On the left side of my screen, I see The Rock. On the right side of my screen, I see Darby Allin being murdered by Brody King. That's about as close as you're ever going to get to seeing The Rock on Dynamite. But we got it tonight. Back from the break, Darby finally fought back. He had a belt, and he wrapped it around. He was outside the ring. He reached in with the belt, wrapped it around Brody's feet, and tripped him. And with King on the floor, Darby got back in the ring and flew out of the ring. He connected with one of his insane suicide dives. Inside, Brody put him in a tree of woe in the corner and went for the cannonball, but he missed when Darby pulled himself up. And Darby put him down with a code red for a near fall. He tried to mount a comeback. And that's the other thing about this match that I liked. When I say that they told a story, some people are going to look at Darby Allin and say, what story is being told? All this guy is doing is taking crazy bumps, landing on his head. That's true. But the story they were telling here, it's the whole David and Goliath thing, right? Darby was being dominated. He was being abused in this match. And then he slowly started to try to mount a comeback. Because Darby has a lot of heart. He doesn't give up so easily. So he was trying to fight his way back into this match. And it felt like he was in a fight. It felt like he was in a real battle to stay alive, basically. Darby exposed one of the top turnbuckles. He slammed Brody King's head into it. King caught Allin in a sleeper hold while they were on the apron, and then dumped his body to the floor the same way he did in that Royal Rampage match a few weeks ago. Allin beat Paul Turner's count, though. It didn't look like he was going to make it back into the ring in time, and then at the very last moment, he jumped up and he slid into the ring. But it was to no avail. Brody King immediately picked him up and dropped him on his head with the Gonzo Bomb. He drilled him head first down into the mat. And he pinned him. And again, this is where having someone like Taz on commentary is actually very effective because the first comment that Taz made was the fact that he broke his neck many years ago back in ECW. And he mentioned that and he said he watched that and he cringed. I watched that and I never broke my neck. I watched that and I cringed. This was brutal, but as I said before, I thought it was brutal in a good way because the way they booked this made Brody King look like the biggest badass in the world, and Darby Allin doesn't really lose anything for it. Darby clearly has no issue giving his body up, trying to make his opponent, look good. I have to say this about Darby Allin, though, right? I will give him credit for doing as good a job as anybody, I think, in this company, of trying to make and succeeding in making his opponent look like a world beater. But I also think that Darby has a screw loose up here. And I think we always kind of knew that. But what really drove the point home for me about how fucking crazy this guy is before the Owen Hart tournament match with Jeff Hardy, they had a video package. Darby was being interviewed, and he was openly talking about the fact that not only does he think that they are potentially going to end up in the hospital tonight, but he was talking like he wanted to end up in the hospital. Like he was attempting, he was going to do everything in his power to make sure that that happened. Like if he did not end up in the hospital, it would almost be like a failure on his part. And that's when I knew this guy's out of his fucking mind. So I actually think he enjoys it. Mick Foley used to talk about that. He used to say, Jim Ross on commentary would always say about Mankind, I think he enjoys it. I think he enjoys the pain. And Foley would laugh and say, nobody enjoys pain. Of course, I don't enjoy the pain. I'm not so sure about Darby Allin. I think he actually does enjoy it on some level. And to him, it's fun. So after the match, King put Allin in a sleeper hold, wouldn't let go. All of a sudden, we hear Sting's music, and out comes Sting. And he climbs into the ring. As soon as he gets into the ring, Brody King grabs Sting, and he throws Sting into the corner. He goes to charge in at him. Sting moves out of the way, grabs Brody, and goes to give him the Scorpion Death Drop. Before he could execute the move, though, the lights go out. When the lights come back on, we see Malachi Black is in the ring. He's face-to-face with Sting. Darby is still down. Brody King is down. They talked on commentary about how they thought they heard something, so he must have hit the move. He must have hit the Scorpion Death Drop. We just didn't see it. But now we have Malachi and Sting. They're face-to-face. Brody King, though, recovers. He grabs Sting from behind in a sleeper hold, and Malachi Black spits the black mist right in Sting's face. So King puts Sting down with the sleeper. All of a sudden, we hear more music. This time, it is the music of the Redeemer. It is the music of Miro. By the way, what is that? Because it was trending for days on Twitter. There's a Showtime show with two guys who I guess they were really good friends, and now they're not. They had some kind of falling out, and I guess Showtime announced that their show is being canceled or discontinued or whatever. I think one of them, is one of them called Miro? Is it Mero or Miro? I've never actually watched the show, but that's all anybody was talking about this week on social media. I don't know if it's pronounced Mero or Miro. But anyway, the one and only Miro here came out. He walked out onto the stage, and he and the House of Black exchanged stares from afar. Never came to blows. Never got that far. And they left everybody wondering exactly what the hell is going on between Miro and Malachi Black. And my sense coming out of this segment, this felt to me like it was setting up a trios match where we're going to get Sting, Darby Allin, and Miro against the House of Black. That's my impression coming out of this segment. But I thought this was great. Just a total ass-kicking, exactly the outcome that it should have been. Darby fought back, and the Monster just shrugged him off and got the win in the end. Is it Desus and Mero? Is that how it's pronounced? Miro. Okay, so it's Desus and Miro. Apparently some kind of falling out. I guess, hey, things happen, right? Some people grow apart. Sometimes money gets involved. Sometimes it's women that get involved. Sometimes it's just ambition. So Tony Schiavone was in the back with two dimes from NXT. Now, I'm sure very few of you actually pay attention to NXT these days. So for those of you who don't know, Tony D'Angelo has too many Tonys. We have Tony Khan, we have Tony Schiavone, we have Tony Schiavone, Troy. The other guy's name is Troy, not Tony. But Tony D'Angelo, he does this mafioso gimmick on NXT 2.0. And they really, at first, it was pretty obvious he was doing a fake Sopranos gimmick. Now they're giving him his own, you know, his own crew, and I mean they're laying it on thick. So they gave two henchmen. One of them was this guy. They called him Two Dimes, Troy Two Dimes. Well, Two Dimes, as far as the reports that I saw, I think he popped on a drug test because he got released out of nowhere a number of weeks ago. They fired him. And all of a sudden, I look and I see right before the show went on the air tonight, they made the announcement that there was going to be a match for the FTW Championship. Ricky Starks, open challenge, would be defending against Cole Carter. That's his name, Cole Carter. Cole Carter being the former Two Dimes. Now, funny enough, how did they write him off NXT? They said that he was sleeping with the fishes. And they had this vignette with Tony D'Angelo there. They were throwing something off a bridge. He was sleeping with the fishes. Well, tonight he was swimming with the sharks here on Shark Week. And there he was. And, you know, I don't agree with taking these lower level WWE castoffs and immediately putting them on AEW television. You know, if Tony Khan wants to sign this guy because he thinks he's got some talent and put him on Dark or Dark Elevation, I don't see any issue with that at all. To take him and put him on Dynamite and put him, and I know it's an open challenge, but there he is now. You know, fired only a matter of weeks ago from NXT, again, for what I believe was a failed drug test. And here he is on Dynamite tonight, challenging for the FTW Championship. I totally understand if it's a bigger name. When they debuted Claudio at Forbidden Door, you know, somebody on that level, like a major WWE name, major either a main eventer or an upper mid-carder, someone that people would recognize or that they plan to use in a prime position, I totally understand that. You want to debut that guy on Dynamite. Fucking Two Dimes does not need to make his debut on Dynamite. And at first when I saw him, I said, well, okay, I'm sure he'll just be fed to Ricky Starks. It'll be maybe a quick squash. It wasn't. We'll get to it a little bit later on, but it wasn't. That match actually surprised me, and not in a good way, what they did. So Ricky Starks showed up, and he said that he's been FTW champion for well over a year. He doesn't see that changing, and Carter vowed to beat Starks and take his title. Yes, Mr. Dynamite in the chat says, low-key proving MJF's point. Yeah, Tony Khan proving MJF's point. Exactly right. We had Jon Moxley and Wheeler Yuta taking on best friends. We had William Regal and Orange Cassidy sat in on commentary. Orange Cassidy actually did speak. He didn't say much. Regal did most of the talking. Moxley hurled Chuck Taylor over a table at ringside and then got back into the ring. He ran into an elbow from Trent Beretta. Beretta went to the ropes. He dove at Moxley, but Moxley caught him coming off with a cutter on the way down. Moxley tagged in Yuta for a double team, but Chuck broke it up, hit the awful waffle on Moxley, and then a second one on Wheeler Yuta. Best friends wanted the strong zero, but Yuta fought out of it. And Trent prevented Yuta from tagging in Moxley. Chuck tagged in, ran right into a jumping guillotine from Yuta. Moxley took out Trent, but Chuck fought out of the guillotine with a suplex. Yuta surprised Chuck with his seatbelt pinning predicament and got the win. No surprise there, because Wheeler Yuta is challenging Daniel Garcia and defending his Ring of Honor Pure title on pay-per-view this Saturday. Would not have made any sense to have Yuta on the show and have him lose. I thought the action was good. The focus was mostly on Wheeler Yuta, and for the reason I just mentioned, because he is the one defending his championship this Saturday at Death Before Dishonor. In fact, multiple times during this match, they cut to the back and they show Daniel Garcia watching this match on the screen. So that's where the focus was, and the AEW interim champion, he felt like a background player on the show tonight. Jon Moxley is the interim AEW World Champion. He played second fiddle to Wheeler Yuta in this match, and even in the end of the match, with all the interference and everything, he just felt like an afterthought on the show tonight. Speaking of Death Before Dishonor, we got a video package to promote the Jonathan Gresham title defense against Claudio Castagnoli. And they actually had some comments in here from Ian Riccoboni. I had somebody ask me a few days ago, what's up with Ian Riccoboni? Is he going to be there? Is he going to be used at all? I think it's safe to say the answer is yes. And he was a talking head in this video. Ian Riccoboni is very good. It wouldn't make any sense for Tony Khan not to use him, so I'm sure he'll be the lead announcer on Saturday. We had Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland. They were out next to celebrate their big tag team championship win on Dynamite last week. Swerve in our glory. The story on this is that the plan all along was for Swerve and Strickland to win the tag team titles and go on and have not really a quick one and done type of run. It looks like they're going to have these championships for a while. Because the only reason they even teased a split, and they were teasing maybe a heel turn by Swerve, it was all just to surprise people so that when they won the belts, people would be shocked. And it worked on me because I certainly was not expecting them to walk out with those belts last week. But I'm glad. I'm glad that they're not splitting them up. They are a good team. I do think it's a good spot for them to be in right now. Keith Lee, you know, long term, I think he's got that singles push in him, but it's pretty clear with everything going on right now on this roster, they wouldn't have a spot for him. I mean, there are other people who are even as good or better than Keith Lee, who they really don't have a story or a spot for right now on this show. So, not a bad place, I think, for them to be, and they do work very well together. So they walk to the ring, and they walk right past a table. A table that was set up at ringside with a cake on it, so you knew exactly where this was going. You can't have a wrestling segment, apparently, these days without the cake ending up in somebody's face or their ass or some other part of their body. So there's a table at ringside. There's a cake on it. There's champagne. They get into the ring, and Swerve points out a man by the name of Kevin Gates, who I guess is a rapper. He's in the crowd. I wasn't even paying attention so much to Kevin Gates. I saw my boy Montez, who was actually standing right behind Kevin Gates. Shout out to him. So Keith Lee wanted to toast their title reign, but he was interrupted by Smart Mark Sterling and Tony Nese. They came to the ring. Smart Mark has been trying to get people to sign this petition to get Swerve Strickland banned from AEW because he's untrustworthy. I guess that's the reason why. So Sterling talked about his petition. He wanted to get this Kevin Gates guy to sign the petition. Gates wouldn't do it. Sterling said that just like Swerve, Gates is untrustworthy and his music sucks. And then we're fighting words. So Kevin Gates comes around the barricade. Tony Nese then steps in between them. Smart Mark is standing back. He's threatening to sue this guy if he puts his hands on him. All of a sudden, Gates drops Nese with a stiff-looking punch. I had to go back and rewind just to see how much of a working punch that really was. Swerve picked up the cake, and when Sterling turned around, he put the cake in Sterling's face. This felt like something out of Monday Night Raw. And I don't mean that in a good way. Backstage, Tony Schiavone interviewed the teams of John Silver and Alex Reynolds, The Butcher and The Blade. I know I've said it before, but The Butcher is in tremendous shape. You could tell he's leaned up. He's lost some weight. He's looking good. Silver and Reynolds had t-shirts they were going to give them as gifts. And so John Silver holds out his t-shirt for The Butcher, and it says Butch. As if we don't have enough with Butch on Friday nights. Now we have Butch on Wednesday nights. Because it was such a great name in the first place. So he has the t-shirt that says Butch. Alex Reynolds has a t-shirt for The Blade. He opens it up. And it also says Butch. And all of a sudden, The Butcher and The Blade beat the living piss out of these two. A well-deserved beating that they gave to the Dark Order. They beat these guys down until Hangman Page showed up with a chair and he chased off the heels. This was very dumb. They did this to set up a match on Rampage on Friday. This was an incredibly stupid segment. I don't know who put this together, but this was very dumb. We had Christian Cage and Luchasaurus teaming up for the first time. We've seen Christian out there with Luchasaurus, but this was the first time in the ring in an actual wrestling match. We haven't seen Christian wrestling much. So this was going to be his first match in a while. Christian started off the match immediately, though, tagged out to Luchasaurus. Luchasaurus leveled Pillman, and Griff Garrison hit a couple of rolling elbows. Pillman landed a thrust kick, but the Dinosaur took both of them down with a double clothesline. He slammed Garrison onto Pillman, and then Christian tagged in, and he stole the pin. He took the pin off for himself. So, you know, his motto when he came into AEW was outwork everybody, and he is trying to show that he could get by doing just the opposite, by doing as little as possible. He won the match without really lifting a finger. So when the match is over, Christian is posing on Luchasaurus' shoulders. He's got him up on his shoulders, and he's celebrating, and all of a sudden we hear Baltimore. Tarzan Boy, and here comes Jungle Boy. First time in weeks that we've seen him on television since Christian turned on him. He walks out with a chair in his hand, and he slowly makes his way down the aisle, and he runs right into Luchasaurus. And the two of them are staring at each other, and it looks like Jungle Boy might be picking up the chair to use it on Luchasaurus. Luchasaurus looks back at the ring, and he steps aside. He clears the way for Jungle Boy to go after Christian. Christian is beside himself in the ring. Everybody cheers. Christian bails. Jungle Boy chases after him. And I like the fact that Jungle Boy went after him. In so many of these segments, somebody will leave the ring and there's like a fucking force field that prevents the babyface from actually going after the heel. There was no force field for Jungle Boy. He went right into the crowd, chased him right up the staircase, right out onto the concourse. We didn't see him again after that. They cut back down to ringside. We see the Dinosaur. The Dinosaur is walking to the back, and they move on to the next segment. Now, I had a couple of buddies at the show tonight. One of them, my buddy Noah. Some of you, you know, you've heard me mention him before. He's been on the podcast. Noah was at the show tonight, and Noah texted me to tell me that the Dinosaur went back through the babyface tunnel. They have the two entrance tunnels. So he went through the babyface tunnel as opposed to the heel tunnel. I'm not buying it. You know, what's the point of turning Luchasaurus, the new mask, the new video, right? The new entrance, the new attitude, which I've liked. I like the sort of, this is like the Kane version of Luchasaurus. I like Luchasaurus Black. I like the fact that, you know, he's been more, you know, violent, and they've turned him heel, and he's got this whole new attitude about him, and Christian's in his corner, and I like that. What would be the point, after only a few weeks of doing that, of just having him go back to being a babyface again and being with Jungle Boy? There has to be more to this than meets the eye. So I am not buying this. Christian is a prick. Christian is, he plays a great asshole on TV. So Christian is great in this role. I would have to think that this is all part of a setup to lull Jungle Boy into thinking that he and Luchasaurus are back together. Jurassic Express is still together, but then they'll lower the boom on him. And he'll realize that Luchasaurus is not with him, because I think it would be a mistake to not have Jungle Boy need to first go through Luchasaurus to then get to Christian Cage. I know Luchasaurus is the bigger guy, but Luchasaurus should be the setup that Jungle Boy has to get through in order to get his hands on Christian Cage. That can only work if Luchasaurus is a heel. So I'm going to reserve judgment on this until I see where this goes. I think if he did go back to being a babyface, it would be a big mistake. And hopefully this is all, as I think, just part of a swerve that ends up making Jungle Boy not even look like an idiot necessarily. But, you know, again, this is the first interaction on television that we have seen with Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus since Jungle Boy, you know, went out with the injury angle. This is the first time that they've had any kind of on-screen interaction together. Him stepping aside and clearing the way could be all part of a master plan by Christian Cage. Christian had to know one of these weeks that Jungle Boy was going to show up, right? It was only a matter of which week. He had a plan for that. He only wants Jungle Boy to think that Luchasaurus is back with him, when in fact, hopefully, that is not the case. We had Ricky Starks defending the FTW Championship. Got to be careful here. I'm almost in the barbed wire. I don't want to cut myself open here. Ricky Starks against Cole Carter, open challenge for the FTW Championship. This was a head-scratcher. This was a head-scratcher. Not only putting this kid on TV, right, so soon after he got fired from NXT, but it felt like he took 80% of this match. I think Ricky maybe at the beginning got a few moves in there, but really, almost from the very beginning, and I think through a break, this was almost entirely Cole Carter. I mean, Ricky Starks, he's been in AEW right from day one. He's over. The people like him, even though he's a heel. The people like him. He's got the FTW title, even though it's not an official title, right? He's walking around with the championship. Cole Carter goes in there, and you would think that Ricky Starks, this was the toughest match of his career. They gave this kid so much offense in this match. So if you, like I did, first saw him and thought, okay, he's just being used to have Ricky Starks go in there and he's going to beat him quickly, that was not the case at all. This was, by no means was this a squash at all. He took far more of this match than I expected him to, much more than he should have. So the longer the match went, the fans obviously didn't like this either. They felt the same way, and it's rare that you see this kind of reaction, you know, to an AEW match from the live audience, because the live audience generally, they eat this shit up. They're a very loyal fan base. There were no fans of Cole Carter. They booed him. He was in control of the match, even though, again, Ricky Starks is the heel. They like him. And so every time Cole Carter would do something, the crowd booed. Carter missed a 450 splash attempt, and finally Ricky caught him with a spear, and he pinned him. So he didn't even get the Rochambeau. He just speared him, and he pinned him. I was shocked. I was shocked by the booking of this match. The way they laid this thing out and booked this, I was not expecting. This was not good. And when I say that this was not good, it's not even a knock on Cole Carter's work. His work was solid. There was really nothing wrong with his work. But the booking of this match was a complete head-scratcher. So after the match, Starks got on the mic, and he said that he's got more in the tank. He's ready for another challenge. He wanted somebody else to come on out and accept the open challenge. And out comes Danhausen. Big reaction because people love Danhausen. And he accepts the challenge, and Starks backtracks and says, well, you know what? I'm not really ready. It's not going to be tonight. It'll be next week. So on Dynamite next week, it's going to be Ricky Starks defending the FTW title against Danhausen. And I know some people are going to lose their minds over this. Oh my God, I can't believe that Danhausen is challenging for a championship. How awful. It's the FTW title, okay? It's not that deep. Don't get your undies in a bunch. It's not that big of a deal. But here's how I would do it. Here's how I would do it. Even though the FTW title, it may not have a lot of prestige in this company, it may not be officially recognized as a AEW championship, here's how I would book this. Because I could see them actually putting the title on Danhausen. I would like to think that Taz would put his foot down and say, you're not putting the FTW title on fucking Danhausen. But Danhausen is over. People love him, just like Orange Cassidy. Could I see him winning the championship? Of course. Yes, I could. I could see them doing that, but that's not what I would do. How I would do this is you have... Now, he'll be competitive, right? I mean, after all, fucking Two Dimes over here made this look like this was a WrestleMania main event for Ricky Starks. So if he could compete, then I'm sure Danhausen will give him a run for his money. But he doesn't win the championship. When the match is over, Ricky Starks, Powerhouse Hobbs, they're pummeling Danhausen. They're beating Danhausen down. All of a sudden, here comes Hook. I know Hookhausen isn't a thing anymore, but there is that relationship. There is that friendship there. Here comes Hook to break things up and to save the day. That then sets up a future FTW championship match with Ricky Starks and Hook. In fact, I hope that's the entire point of this open challenge gimmick. Ricky Starks only just started doing the open challenge, so, you know, in a way, it's like they would be killing it, you know, very quickly, but that's how I would do it. The Danhausen thing just has to be a setup for Hook to get involved. That then sets the matchup, and eventually Hook is going to be the one to take that FTW title from Ricky Starks. It can be no other way. It can be no other way. In fact, it's the best possible outcome to all of this, because there is no need for the FTW title. The FTW title is a complete waste of time. Hook is very popular. People would love to see Hook hold the championship that his own father created, and that's the tie-in there. The FTW title is a title that was created by Hook's father. How appropriate that Hook would be the last FTW champion. He wins the title. He could even hold it for a while. Eventually, though, it just quietly fades away. And you retire the FTW title with the last champion being Taz's son. Just eventually, it just quietly goes away. And Hook goes on with his career. But Hook is the only name that even remotely makes sense. If Ricky Starks is going to lose that title, it's got to be to Hook. We never did get any kind of explanation, by the way, for why he stopped hanging around with Starks and Hobbs, right? They're members of Team Taz. Taz's own son doesn't hang out with them anymore. Why? It was never really explained. So I actually think there's a story there. There's an unresolved story there. That's the only direction that this should be going in. And maybe they could hold off until Chicago and they can do the title match in Chicago at All Out and have him win the championship Labor Day weekend. Tony Schiavone was in the ring to introduce the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Champions, FTR, to promote their match coming up on the Death Before Dishonor pay-per-view this Sunday, or this Saturday, rather. I'm still used to Sunday pay-per-views. Their match coming up with Jay and Mark Briscoe. If you did not see the sit-down interview between FTR and the Briscoes with Caprice Coleman as the moderator, it's about a six-minute video. AEW posted it on their YouTube channel, I think it was last week. I talked about it then. If you didn't see, go out of your way and watch it. It was a tremendous piece of business. It is a textbook example of how you promote a match. This promo segment here tonight on Dynamite was textbook example number two. Cash Wheeler opened the segment. He said that he can never get used to getting this kind of reaction, this kind of positive reaction from the crowd, and they gave them a huge ovation after that. And they had, by the way, they were out there with all of their titles. They had the Ring of Honor tag team titles, they had the AAA tag team titles, and they had the IWGP tag team titles. So Cash said that he has a secret. 2022 has been a pretty decent year so far. He said they've had some big matches and nothing was bigger for them than the first time they stepped into the ring with the Briscoes. They went to war. Death Before Dishonor, FTR against the Briscoes, part two. He says he respects them for 20 years. They've helped lift tag teams up, but this Saturday, two out of three falls. They are not going to take what FTR worked so hard to attain. He said they respect them, but they will have to take the titles from their cold, dead hands if they think that they're going to get those belts. So then he turned the mic over to Dax Harwood. Dax the Axe, he shared a story about a five-year-old little girl that he knew back home. He said that little girl's parents took her in for a routine checkup one day at the doctor, and the doctor found that she had an irregular heartbeat. So they sent her for more tests and MRIs and CAT scans, and they come to find out that this five-year-old girl had a hole in her heart. And the doctor told the parents that if she worked hard, it's possible that that hole could close up on its own. But if it didn't, then that little girl would have to go in and have open-heart surgery. Open-heart surgery at 5 years old. He said the girl fought her ass off, and the doctor, 3 years later, when he checked, found that the hole had completely closed on its own. So he put over all that hard work put in by that girl, and then came the big reveal that that little girl was Dax's daughter. And I was never aware of that. I don't know if he's ever shared that story publicly before. This may have been the first time. I don't know. It's the first time that I've heard that story. And he said that if that little girl will fight that hard for something that is not promised, he goes, then daddy's going to do the same thing. Says Saturday night, pay-per-view, Death Before Dishonored. Dax says that he's going to fight like an 8-year-old girl. He said that they're going to whoop their asses. This was fantastic. This was great. You had Cash Wheeler talking about how important it was for them to be in the ring with the Briscoes the first time, how they went to war, they beat the hell out of each other, and you're going to have to take these titles from our cold, dead hands if you think you're going to get these belts back. Dax chimes in, shares that personal story, which, again, I mean, who cannot be moved by a story like that? And says that he's going to be fighting for her, and if she can fight like that, then there's no reason that he can't fight like that. And I love that line. I'm going to fight like a 5-year-old girl or an 8-year-old girl. I'm going to fight like an 8-year-old girl. I feel like only in that instance can he say that, and it actually comes off sounding cool. So I thought this promo was fantastic, and honestly, the best promoted match and the real main event on the show this Saturday is not Claudio against Jonathan Gresham. It's not Samoa Joe against Jay Lethal. It's the tag team title match. It's Briscoes, it's FTR, and frankly, I would probably put that match on last. I probably would headline the show with that tag team title match. That is the real main event of the Death Before Dishonor show on Saturday. Tremendous stuff. This was not so tremendous, though. Unfortunately, what they followed this up with, we had rapper and producer Jermaine Dupri. He accompanied Jade Cargill and the Baddies and Stokely Hathaway down to the ring for a tag team match. It was Jade and Kiera Hogan taking on Athena and Willow Nightingale. Originally, it was going to be a 6-person tag, a trios match. Layla Gray, the honorary interim baddie, was going to be in there on the heel side. Chris Statlander was going to be in there on the babyface side. We found out a few hours before the show that Layla Gray was not medically cleared to compete, so it turned into a tag team match. Chris Statlander was banned from ringside. That's what Stokely Hathaway told us. During the commercial, the heels took control and were beating down Athena. Willow got the hot tag and hit a spine buster on Kiera Hogan. Jade came in, broke up the pin, and Jade faced off with Athena in the ring. Now, interestingly, in the promo segment in the back before this match, we had Athena, Statlander, and Willow. Willow! Sorry, I lapsed into my Willow there for a second. I didn't know what Willow we were talking about. Are we talking about Willow Nightingale? Are we talking about Willow? Here, I thought we were going to end up seeing Willow in AEW, and then Jeff Hardy fucked it all up. But the three ladies were in the back doing a promo, and Athena was talking about how, boy, you know, the AEW Women's Championship is going to look really good around your waist, talking to Chris Statlander. And she said, the TBS title is going to look really good around my waist. So I don't know if they are, you know, pivoting away where Statlander is going to eventually challenge Thunder Rosa, or if that was just a comment that Athena threw out there, because I thought it was going to be a three-way feud, ultimately, where Statlander and Athena would go after Jade Cargill. Now it looks like it might be Athena going after Jade Cargill. I still feel like Chris Statlander should be the one to take that title from Jade. Now, if they want her to feud with Thunder Rosa or even eventually take the title from Thunder Rosa, that's the bigger title. At least it's supposed to be. The way these women are booked, I'm not so sure. No, there's no better booked champion right now in all of wrestling, I feel like, than Jade Cargill. But I thought that was an interesting comment. So we'll see if that ends up being the case, where Statlander does not go after Jade, and instead she ends up going after Thunder Rosa. But we end up with a face-off in the ring here with Athena and Jade Cargill. They trade blows, and Jade ended up kipping up. Athena then kipped up herself, to the surprise of Jade. And at that point in the match, things got a little ugly. Athena caught Jade with a jumping meteora. Jade rolled out to the floor. Athena followed her. And she tried to powerbomb Hogan on the apron. And boy, this was not working out. There was a miscommunication in here somewhere with these two. Eventually, she did finally power bomb her. Not a very good one, but she power bombed her on the apron. There's just some kind of miscommunication going on between these two. Hathaway got in Athena's face, and that distraction was good enough for Cargill to boot Athena, who fell backwards and hit the back of her head on the ring steps. So that sounded nasty. Back inside, Jade tagged in, hit a blue thunderbomb for two, and then the Jaded to Willow for the win. You can't put all this on Jade. She is still very inexperienced, but it just felt like this thing started to fall apart there towards the end. And it wasn't, again, just all on Jade either. So this was not great stuff here from these four. We come to the main event. Look at this. We've already come to the main event of this show. It was barbed wire everywhere. Deathmatch. Chris Jericho in his Painmaker persona, the undefeated Painmaker. Never been beaten when he's been the Painmaker, which is really just him with some, looking like he's from a Clockwork Orange. He's got some makeup on his face. You know, he looks ridiculous, but that's the Painmaker. Taking on Eddie Kingston. And the Jericho Appreciation Society would be suspended above the ring inside of a shark cage. That is the tie-in to Shark Week, because the Warner executives wanted some kind of Shark Week tie-in, and so Tony Khan said, all right, we'll put these guys in a shark cage. So that was the tie-in there. They kept the ring ropes up. They didn't pull the ring ropes down. This was not like what they did in the old ECW. But they wrapped barbed wire around the ropes. Justin Roberts had barbed wire wrapped around the microphone, which I actually thought was kind of a clever touch. Ruby Soho was shown sitting at ringside, and she had possession, we were told, of the key to the shark cage, as well as the controls that lifted the shark cage up and down. So as soon as you saw Ruby sitting at ringside, it just screamed angle alert, right? So you knew we probably were going to see Ty Conti at some point. And we did. So that's the first thing that I noticed. Jericho entered with Floyd the baseball bat wrapped in barbed wire, again, in his Painmaker getup. Kingston came down to the ring and immediately walked right over to Justin Roberts. He grabbed the barbed wire wrapped microphone out of his hand, and he began to pummel Jericho in the head with the microphone and split him open. So Jericho is already bleeding now. We're 10 seconds into this match, or maybe not even 10 seconds into this match, and already Chris Jericho is a bloody mess. They brawled outside the ring. Jericho used the ring bell as a weapon, and they also had barbed wire wrapped around the ring bell as well. Back in the ring, Eddie tossed Jericho into the ropes, and he got all tied up in the barbed wire. Jericho came back, hit a top rope Hurricane Rana, sent Kingston flying down onto a barbed wire board. Really, it was a table that just wasn't elevated, that had barbed wire on it. And so Kingston fell ass first onto the barbed wire, which, if this were real barbed wire, and I don't know what kind of barbed wire they use. Maybe it was real. Maybe some of it was real. Maybe some of it was rubber tipped. I don't know how much of it was real or not. But if you're in a barbed wire match, right, I'm sure it probably was real here, but in a barbed wire match, the last thing that you want to do is land ass first on razor wire. That is the last thing that you want. So anyway, he was checking his junk to make sure everything was still intact. So we went into the final ad break. During the break, Jericho had Kingston in the barbed wire locked in the walls of Jericho. They came back and Kingston gave Jericho a suplex from the ring apron down. They both fell down through a table on the floor that had barbed wire on top of it. And all of a sudden, here comes the most predictable run-in in the world. Here comes Ty Conti, who looked like she almost tripped. She comes running down to the ring, and she immediately goes after Ruby Soho, and she starts to beat the crap out of Ruby Soho. Here comes Anna Jay. Now, Anna Jay and Ty Conti were best friends. As far as we know, they might still be best friends, right? They used to be on TV together as baby faces. Then Ty Conti ended up going heel. We had a segment on the show last week where Ty Conti confronted Anna Jay in the back in the trainer's room and basically said, maybe you ought to consider a change in attitude because you barely get any television time anymore. And she told her to think about it. So that was the first sign that something like what was about to happen was probably going to happen. Anna Jay runs down, pulls her off, and she's confronting her friend or her former friend. We don't know, but you can kind of see it coming. And Anna Jay all of a sudden turns and she punches Ruby Soho in the face. So we got kind of a random Anna Jay heel turn here in this main event. She grabbed the controls for the shark cage and she started lowering the cage. Ty Conti, this was the comedic portion of this match. As Anna Jay is controlling the shark cage and lowering it back down, Ty Conti grabs the key because Ruby Soho was in possession of the key. She was the key master. She was looking for the gatekeeper. So the key master goes over and attempts to unlock the padlock on the shark cage. She is unable to do so. She is having a bitch of a time trying to get this thing open, to the point where right before the camera cut to a different shot, you could see she hands the key over to Daniel Garcia, who is trapped in the cage. So she's basically like, look, fuck this. You try to unlock this. So she gives up. She hands the key over to Daniel Garcia to try to unlock it himself. I guess he didn't have much luck either, because they cut back. They're all still in the cage, and Daniel Garcia just says, you know what, fuck this. And he squeezes through the bars and escapes the cage, because he's not a big guy, right? He's very skinny. So he's able to fit himself through the bars of the cage, as is Angelo Parker. And I'm looking at Matt Menard. Looking at Matt Menard. Now, I didn't see if he ended up going through the bars. I'm going to guess that he didn't. But I could be wrong. I think eventually they finally did get the lock open because all the members eventually got out of the cage. I don't think Matt Menard or Jake Hager were squeezing through these fucking bars. But Angelo Parker did manage to get through the bar. So that will end up as a Botchamania moment, I'm sure, as it should. I just had the Benny, what is it? The Benny Hinn music or whatever it is in my head as I'm watching this. So this shark cage, which was supposed to contain all of the members of the Jericho Appreciation Society, as I said on the podcast this weekend, of course, they were all going to escape. It was just inevitable. They were going to find their way out of that fucking thing, which negated the entire point of even having the cage above the ring in the first place. But they had to get their shark tank, their shark week tie-in somehow. And so that was their way of doing it. So it ended up meaning nothing. It's like having a Hell in a Cell match, and then you have interference and people leaving the cage and coming back into the cage. It's like, what's the fucking point? The whole point of the gimmick is that you're supposed to prevent people from being able to get out, and you're supposed to prevent people from being able to get in. The whole point of the shark cage is to contain these men so they cannot interfere in the match. So now they're all ganging up on Eddie Kingston in the ring, and they're kicking the crap out of this guy. Here come members of the Blackpool Combat Club. Here comes Moxley. Here comes Claudio. Here comes Wheeler Yuta. Ortiz is with them because he no longer has his tag team partner, because Santana, it does sound like it's an ACL injury, and he's going to be out for 8 to 12 months. So Santana is sayonara for now. He's not going to be back anytime soon. So Ortiz is on his own. Although it sounds to me like Santana and Ortiz had the same kind of breakup that those two guys from Showtime just had. I don't know that they're on the same page necessarily. So they all run out to try to take out the members of the Jericho Appreciation Society to fight them off. Ortiz had the sock gimmick, the loaded sock, and he hit Jericho with it. Jericho ended up being put through a table that was propped up in the corner with an exploder. Kingston hit an exploder, put him through the table. Went for the pin, but Jericho got a shoulder up. Jericho hit a code breaker on Kingston, and as Eddie was coming at him with a barbed wire chair, he caught him in a code breaker, and then the chair with the barbed wire on it fell on Jericho's face. So not a very bright move on his part. Now a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. Yeah, I hit the gym 4 times this week. A lot of you probably do the same, trying to take care of your body. But taking care of your mind is just as important. And I'll be honest, it's not something I really give a lot of thought to, not as much as I should. The way we take care of our minds affects each and every aspect of our day, so it's important to take the time to keep them healthy. There are lots of ways to keep a healthy brain, like learning a new language or taking power naps, but there's also BetterHelp online therapy. Having used BetterHelp before, I found it to be really helpful. That's why the word help is in the name of the service. The advice I received, though, I mean, it was very helpful to me. And if it was helpful to me, it can be very helpful to you, too. BetterHelp is online therapy that offers video, phone, and live chat sessions with your therapist. You don't even have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. I matched in even less time than that. I found it helpful just to have somebody to talk to and somebody who would listen. For some people, that may be the most important benefit to using BetterHelp. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/solomonster. That's betterhelp.com/solomonster. Jericho went for a lion salt. Eddie threw a chair up at him on the way down. Kingston hit the spinning back fist, went for the pin. Jericho kicked out. Eddie went under the ring. He pulled out more razor wire. He wrapped it around Jericho's body and then applied the stretch plum, which is the same move that he used to beat Jericho. He submitted Jericho with that move earlier this year at Revolution. As he's got him in the stretch plum, here's Sammy Guevara. The first time that we have seen Sammy since he took that big bump in the Blood and Guts match off the top of the cage. That was, I guess, 2 weeks ago. It wasn't that long ago, I guess. They made it sound like he's been gone for a month or more. It's only been 2 weeks since Blood and Guts. Or maybe three. Maybe it's been 3 weeks. I think it's been 3 weeks since Blood and Guts. So Sammy Guevara shows up. He delivers a super kick to Kingston to break the hold. And the big finish here, Jericho wrapped barbed wire around his arm and hit the Judas effect. And he pinned Eddie Kingston to win the match. It was the right outcome. It played out exactly the way that I said it would play out on Sunday when I talked about it. It was a case where Eddie Kingston's goal, his sole purpose here, if you paid attention to the promos that led to this match in the first place, his sole purpose here was Chris Jericho did not bleed at Blood and Guts. Therefore, Jericho made a liar out of him, and he was determined to make sure this time that Jericho bled. So Kingston accomplished what his chief goal was here in this match. In effect, that was a victory for him. But Jericho was going to win the match. And the reason that Jericho wins the match, in my opinion, is because it sets up Jericho now as a potential challenger for Jon Moxley and the interim AEW World title, especially if they're not going to get CM Punk back in time for All Out. Now, I think that Punk is going to be back in time for All Out. That's just my gut feeling on it. And we'll have Punk in the main event in Chicago, him and Moxley one-on-one. But if he's not ready to come back, they're going to need at least one more challenger for that interim world title. Otherwise, why the hell even crown an interim champion if he's not going to defend the title? He already defended it once against Brody King. Who's his next challenger going to be? Chris Jericho now. And I know people are going to, oh, no, not Jericho. They're going to fucking groan. But Jericho is a former AEW World Champion. In fact, Jericho and Moxley were the first two AEW World Champions. You may not like it, but Moxley is going to need another challenger. Who is it going to be? Should it be somebody who is on the rise? Should it be a younger guy who then just gets beat? Or would you rather it be someone like Jericho who Moxley could easily beat? And then he moves on to CM Punk. So that's why I think Jericho won the match. I think it puts him in prime position. We'll see. We'll see if I'm right. We'll see next week on TV if Jericho doesn't come out and start talking about Jon Moxley. And the fact that when they had that battle royal on Dynamite last month to see who would go to wrestle Moxley in the main event and then who would go to Forbidden Door, Jericho wasn't there. He was on a family vacation that week. Jericho wasn't there. He wasn't in the battle royal. He should have been in the battle royal. I mean, the story is there for them to tell. But in order to do that, he had to win this match today. The match is over, and they're clearly rushing to try to get to whatever this last spot is that they're going to do. Kingston did get the last laugh here because he ends up taking Jericho and he throws Jericho out of the ring onto this giant barbed wire. They called it spider, the barbed wire spider, which was basically just a giant board full of barbed wire, like something that Abyss would use back in the day in those Monsters Ball matches in TNA. And Jericho is thrown into the barbed wire and the announcers quickly rush and get off the air because they were running low on time. So another rushed ending here to Dynamite. It almost didn't even mean anything. Jericho gets thrown into this like pit of barbed wire and it's like, you know, we'll see you next week. It's a total afterthought. Look, I'm not a huge fan of these matches. These kinds of matches really don't do anything for me. I really wasn't a fan of this main event. It just, you know, I enjoyed the opener. I thought actually the first two matches on the show tonight were very good, although I enjoyed the opener more. And the FTR promo was fucking great, and I thought they did a great job of promoting that match for the Ring of Honor pay-per-view. But otherwise, a lot of this episode tonight, to me, it was just kind of there. It was kind of a miss. So that's how I felt when the show was over tonight. Rampage this Friday night has Hangman teaming with John Silver to take on the Butcher and the Blade. Or is it now Butch? Maybe it should be Butch. Maybe I'm saying it wrong. Maybe they're Butch now also. Although I think Jerry McDevitt might be drawing up the cease and desist if he comes out as Butch on Rampage this week. So Lethal against Daniels on Friday, and Britt Baker will be in action teaming with Jamie Hayter. And then next Wednesday, Fyter Fest now is going to be done after this week. We move on from Fyter Fest to Fight for the Fallen. Next Wednesday, it's going to be Thunder Rosa defending the AEW Women's Championship against Yamashita from Tokyo Joshi Pro Wrestling. The same Yamashita who beat her. She pinned Thunder Rosa. When Thunder Rosa went over there, it was a championship contenders match, basically. That in AEW, they call them the championship eliminators or whatever name they gave it. Yamashita pinned her. And so therefore she earned herself a future AEW Women's Championship match. That match will happen on Dynamite next Wednesday. And Ricky Starks is going to defend the FTW title in an open challenge. It'll be against Danhausen, and I hope that things play out exactly the way that I pitched it, because I think that's exactly the way that it should be. Otherwise I wouldn't have pitched it that way. Why would I pitch it if I didn't think that it should happen? Preston Ridiculous just renewed his channel membership 3 months in a row. I don't find that ridiculous at all, Preston. I think that's awesome. And I thank you for being a channel member. Now, all this talk about Ring of Honor and Death Before Dishonor, I'm all amped up now for this tag team title match. Truly, the first match between FTR and the Briscoes back in April, if you did not see it. If you are a fan of tag team wrestling, you have to see that match. If you are a fan of tag team wrestling, you cannot go without watching the first match between FTR and the Briscoes. You are not a real fan of tag team wrestling if you do not make the time to watch that match. It will go down for a lot of people when this year is over as their match of the year. I think they absolutely have the potential to top that on Saturday. This time it's 2 out of 3 falls. It's like 2 matches in 1, maybe 3. 3 matches in 1. I think they could very well top the match from April. As I said earlier, that is, in my opinion, the real main event on Saturday. Point being, I will be covering it. So as soon as Ring of Honor Death Before Dishonor is over on Saturday night, I will be live on YouTube for the full review. I'll be live on YouTube talking about the entire pay-per-view. We'll run the whole thing down, so I hope you will come back and join me. Join me then. Let's take a look at the poll and see. And I thought this might be the case. I thought this might be the case because I knew a lot of you were going to agree with me. And sure enough, this is the lowest thumbs-up total for an episode of Dynamite that I think maybe I've ever seen. It's still over the 50% mark. It's still over the equator mark, but about 52% thumbs up, 28% thumbs in the middle, and 20% thumbs down. So I think a lot of people came away from the show tonight with the same opinion that I did. You may have liked a couple of segments, but not a great show. And I was not a fan of that main event. So you can go on Twitter, at Solomonster is the place to go. You know, again, the problem is, if you're into the hardcore stuff and the barbed wire stuff, and all you care about is just, you know, seeing guys thrown into barbed wire, then, you know, this was the match for you. This was the main event for you. You got plenty of that on this show. Kingston was bleeding on his back, and Jericho was bleeding from the head, and, you know, he got thrown into barbed wire about 16 times in the match, and, you know, whatever. I mean, there was a story. At least there was a story. At least it was a grudge match. Eddie Kingston is fantastic. And Eddie Kingston can make you believe that he really did want to rip this guy's face off. But as far as the match itself, not a great match. And an overbooked mess with all the interference. Everybody coming out of the shark cage. Here comes the Blackpool Combat Club. And here comes Anna Jay. And we got kind of, there's a heel turn thrown in there by Anna Jay. Even though we only recently had a heel turn by Julia Hart joining the House of Black. Even Ty Conti, fairly recently, only went heel. I don't know where Paige Van Zandt disappeared to. I just thought of her. What happened to Paige Van Zandt? I think she actually has a bare-knuckle fight coming up. That's probably why. But anyway, let's go to your super chats here. Let's go and read your super chats. And if you send more in, I will certainly read them. I will do my best to answer them. If you have any questions, this is where you guys can chime in and support the channel. Always very much appreciated when you do so. Dick the Cock Johnson. My boy Dick the Cock Johnson. What's going on? $4.99. If Punk is back in time for All Out, then I definitely feel should win tonight and challenge Punk for the title at Grand Slam. Oh, he left a word out. I don't know who he was referring to. He left the actual name of the person that he was referring to out, so I don't know. I feel like blank should win tonight and challenge Punk for the title. Let's all have fun with his super chat and fill in the name that we think he's... Is he talking about Danhausen? I think he's talking about Danhausen. Anna, the magician. The gay manic magician. Not just the magician, but the gay manic magician. How long until we see Tony Khan in a blood match? I think Tony Khan is... I think smart enough to stay away from the blood. Maybe not the powder, but he can stay away from the blood. Be calm, see clearly. Bailey comes back face because they need baby faces. They definitely need baby faces. Especially on that SmackDown side. They got a lot of heels. A lot of heels on SmackDown. Anti-M-Bishop 07. The $5 super chat. If you want blood, you got it. Bon Shot of AC/DC. Cannot freaking wait for Ring of Honor on Saturday night. Lastly, hashtag sign Willow now. All the best. Willow is very good. I've put her over before. I'm glad that you know, they're using her a little more often. But again, that match tonight really was no good. And I think the blame can be spread around. Sometimes it's just an off night. I've seen Willow and I've seen Athena. I've seen them have very good matches. I've seen Jade have very good matches. I think a lot of it also depends on who she's in the ring with. And she was not in the ring with bad or inexperienced people tonight. It just wasn't a good match. But I think Willow is very good. Where are we on the likes, by the way? Give me those like updates. Where are we at? 230, 240? Let's get those likes up. Hit that like button. I want to make sure we get around 300 at least before we get out of here tonight. Can you do that for me? Can you do that for me? We had two dimes on the show tonight. That guy was sleeping with the fishes. You'll be sleeping with the fishes, too, if I don't get at least 300 likes out of you people. Frank Aquilino, the burial of Darby Allin continues. Also, the best friends don't get the credit that they deserve. They should be a top team. Darby Allin was not buried. I don't know how you can look at that as a burial of Darby Allin. Has he lost a number of matches recently? Yes. That is not a burial. Can we please not call this the burial of Darby Allin? That is not a burial. Von Tell, best match ever that happened in your home state. I mean, you got a lot to choose from in the state of New York. Just from Madison Square Garden alone, there have been a lot of classic matches. I don't know that I can pick one off the top of my head. It's not like it's top of mind. You know, a lot of people might say that Triple Threat, main event of WrestleMania 20. But I would go a different way. And again, I keep coming back to WrestleMania. I'll give you one WWE and one non-WWE. It's tough because you could go either way, but WrestleMania 10, right? You got Bret Owen, you got the ladder match, Shawn and Razor. I almost feel like you kind of have to go Shawn and Razor just for the impact and the influence that the match had. Me personally, I'd go Bret Owen at WrestleMania 10 is on that list. And I would go Ring of Honor, one of the best matches that I've ever seen, maybe the best match I've ever seen live, certainly one of, was Ring of Honor in, I want to say it wasn't Death Before Dishonor, I think. It was Glory by Honor. Glory by Honor 5 Night 2. It was Bryan Danielson and Kenta for the Ring of Honor World Championship. Flamethrower Fluff Salisbury. Can't hang out for the stream tonight. Just showing some love for the channel, my friend. Well, thank you for the 5 spot. That is very much appreciated. Thank you, sir. Shinakuma with the 5 spot. I never knew they gave RVD the Phantom title change after Judgment Day 2002. They were really testing the waters with RVD. They were. RVD was super over. When he first came into the company in 2001 and into 2002, he was super over. There was discussion and I think at one point a plan to put the World Heavyweight title on him when he had that match with Triple H for the big gold belt. And funny enough, that got changed. And Triple H ended up beating RVD. Rodimus Prime. $10 super chat from Kevin Gates, punching wrestlers to seeing Jermaine Dupri. I have seen it all. This show was everywhere. Quintus Brown, $5 super chat. I enjoyed Dynamite tonight, but Kingston should have won. I think we're getting Moxley and Jericho it all out if Punk is not ready to return. That's exactly what I said. Great minds think alike. That's exactly why Jericho won that match tonight. There isn't a doubt in my mind. That is why Jericho won that match tonight. Food Hive. The blackest episode of Dynamite ever. All right. I guess that's one way of looking at it. Food Hive also says, do you want the video on my TikTok of you and the bad referee from Sound Off Gamer for your TikTok? Well, you can send it if you want. I don't know if I'll put it up on mine, but if you want to, you can send it over. Frank Aquilino with the $4.99. Seeing the Ring of Honor belts on AEW is silly. They are belts for a dead brand. If I cared about Ring of Honor, I would have watched Ring of Honor. Boy, Frank is full of hot takes here today. Frank ain't taking shit. Do not pass go. What if Luchasaurus never really turned? What if it was all a setup on Jurassic Express's part to get back at Christian? Yeah, I mean, it's possible, but I like the idea of having heel Luchasaurus. You know, and I think that for him to have to go through him to get to Christian, you know, that's a story that could work. But it's absolutely possible. That it was all just a trick played on Christian the whole time. Because look, to be fair, we never really got an explanation about why Luchasaurus just went along with Christian. He whispered something in his ear. We're never told what that was. They never really expanded on that. So maybe it was part of some kind of a plan, but I would be disappointed. I think there's still mileage in that, in Luchasaurus as a heel. And frankly, I feel like I'm also kind of over the whole Jurassic Express thing, and maybe I'm just ready for them to move on, you know, singles-wise. I just think you kill it too soon. There was still mileage left in it. If it was all part of a ruse, though, on their part, then I guess Christian got played. I guess they're just going to go right into Christian and Jungle Boy soon. CJ Gamer, thank you for the sub. Spicy Dried Chicken. Sasha and Naomi leave the WWE Women's Tag Team titles on Johnny Ace's office in May. NXT says, hold my beer. Cora Jade dumps her titles in the trash. What the fuck? What do you mean, what the fuck? That's exactly where they belong. I thought it was a very fitting sight, seeing them in the trash next to a bag of potato chips or something. That's exactly where those fucking things belong. The Yatagaratsu just dropped $10 on my head. Hook should melt it down and make a gold chain out of the FTW title like Kama did with the Undertaker's urn. That's not a bad idea, actually. Boots, no Shark Boy for Shark Week. Well, we had that guy come out in the costume, though, right? We had the mascot. I thought somebody was going to come out and beat up the mascot. I guess not. Zantara, sounds like they needed RoboCop to lumber down and open that cage for them. Yeah, you know what? That's exactly what they needed. They needed RoboCop to come on, mosey on down to the ring. Where's Peter Weller when you need him? Come on down to the ring and pry the bars open. Then we could have had a Sting and RoboCop reunion on the show. How fucking great would that have been? We could have gotten a little reunion going on with those two. JM with that $100 bomb from earlier. Are we getting closer? I see we're getting closer. We're getting closer to that 300 mark on the likes. Come on, we got to get them up. JM says, wow, can't believe this Carter guy was yet another recent WWE release used on TV. Get a ha-ha line off for a small group of fans while you have so many wrestlers under contract that can't get a glimmer of on-screen time. Watch your wrestling. Someone's been watching too much NXT. Yeah, I just don't understand it. I really don't get it. You think of all of the talent. All of there's a helicopter flying over my house right now. I guess I've been found. They are surrounding my house. I don't know how much longer this stream will go on for before they cut the power. But you have all of this talent at your disposal. All of this talent on the show, all of this talent on Dark that you could call up, right? It's an open challenge. You want to get over somebody who you've been featuring. And to just take this guy and just throw him on Dynamite. And maybe it's the only appearance that he'll make on Dynamite. To me, that makes it even worse. You know, again, a Claudio, a Miro, a Malachi, even Athena, somebody like that. I totally understand that. Tony Storm. Fucking Two Dimes, who was on NXT standing in Tony D's corner for, you know, 3 months and then gets dumped over a bridge into a river somewhere, and then he reemerges on Dynamite a few weeks later and takes 80% of the match with Ricky Starks. I don't fucking understand that. I mean, that's just dumb booking is what that is. Thank you, JM, though, for that bomb. Look at this. He sent a $5 super chat as well. What would you do for Eddie Kingston's next program? He seems cold to me after the Jericho feud. I don't know. I feel like he's still got some beef with Claudio if they want to go down that road. I don't know if that would turn him heel. I think it would be hard, though, to turn Kingston heel because he is so beloved. You know what, though? He's so good, though. I'm sure he could do it. He could pull it off. But I think, you know, maybe something with him and Claudio, if they wanted to go in that direction, or I don't know, who would be a good fit for him right now? I don't know. For an Eddie Kingston feud. I just know that, you know, Kingston loses enough that he should probably win. So whoever it is, maybe it shouldn't be Claudio then, because I feel like whoever his next feud is going to be with, it's a feud that he really should come out of on top. It really is something that he should win. And I wouldn't use any of the young, you know, the young guys right now for that, that they're pushing hard. Quintus Brown, what's your thoughts on Ric Flair's last match promo video, and are you covering the show on YouTube? So, next weekend is a busy weekend, because next weekend is SummerSlam, and of course, the usual podcast, that'll be episode 767, not this weekend, but next weekend. And that Sunday, the day after SummerSlam, is Ric Flair's last match. I almost said that with a straight face. But that's what they're calling it. That's the name of the pay-per-view. It's Ric Flair's last match. They put together, actually, a pretty damn good card. They put together a pretty good, even outside of Flair's match. It's wrestlers from all different promotions that are being brought in. I'm going to cover it. I will be ordering the pay-per-view, and I will be live on YouTube when it is over. So you'll get a Ring of Honor review this Saturday, you'll get a SummerSlam review next Saturday, and then the next night you'll get the Ric Flair final match pay-per-view recap. I have no idea what is going to happen in that main event with Ric Flair. He's got a pacemaker, he's 70,000 years old, and anything can happen. I don't wish bad things on him in the ring, but anything can happen. And I will go live on YouTube as soon as it's over. Good, bad, or indifferent. And we'll recap the entire thing. So that's the long way of saying yes. You're going to get a lot of Solid Monster coverage over these next couple of weekends. Anti-M Bishop 07. Watch Terminus on Fight TV tomorrow night. Jonathan Gresham against Konosuke Takeshita. Jay Lethal in action as well. Going to be a good watch. Hit that like button. So there you go, folks. I'm going to be very busy tomorrow, but Terminus on Fight TV. You have been put on warning. You have been put on notice. Yes, and he has a foot injury. That's right. So Flair, not only, you know, look, Flair obviously had the health issues that he had a few years ago. And he's got the pacemaker in and everything, and you know, he's been training and trying to, you know, get himself in good shape. And now he's got the plantar, is it plantar fasciitis or fasciitis? I know it's a painful thing. It's a painful thing. I learned about the whole plantar fasciitis thing when David Wright was playing for the Mets and he had it. And he talked about how painful that was. I wasn't really familiar with that condition, but he's dealing with that now too. But Flair said that it doesn't matter. It's not going to stop him if he has to deaden the foot so he doesn't feel anything. He's wrestling in that match next week. You'll have to fucking drag him out of that building. He is not going to go quietly into the night. He will die in that ring before he bows out of this match. So on top of whatever else he may be dealing with, he's got the whole foot issue now. Bryant Finley, with Britt and Jamie, Storm and Rosa, and now Conti and Jay being featured, are women's tag team titles in the offing? I hope not. Too many titles. We already know trios titles are on the way. It's too much. It's too much. They're not needed. Darth Panic, WWE must be in full panic mode, says Darth Panic, to send out Titus O'Neil to try to do damage control. Maybe Undertaker comes back to say what a nice guy Vince McMahon is. Yeah, we can get that on TV next week. He's like a father to me. I would take a bullet for this man. This is something that he has actually said before. I would take a bullet for this man. Which I guess, you know, look, you can understand that because it was Vince McMahon who came up with the whole Undertaker gimmick. And Undertaker ended up living a very charmed life because of that one Vince McMahon idea. How many other careers, promising careers, were ruined by other equally bad Vince McMahon ideas? I've lost count. But Undertaker certainly has had a very charmed career. EJ Slemp. Last year, I did a classic Rumble match binge. This year, I'm doing the same thing, but for SummerSlam, and I had to start with one of the best, Bret Hart against Mr. Perfect. Well, that is certainly one of the best of all of the SummerSlam matches, although I did enjoy their King of the Ring match more. You can't go wrong with Bret Hart and Mr. Perfect. Really, you can't go wrong with any Bret Hart match, except maybe the Isaac Yankum match. Take out the Isaac Yankum match, and Bret Hart was basically Mr. SummerSlam. Dr. Scorpio, will Solo Monster make an appearance in Halloween Ends, or is he still stuck out there in space? Oh, I thought you were referring to me. That's why I said Solo Monster. I was like, why the fuck am I going to be in Halloween Ends? When did I go to space? Will Jason Voorhees, make an appearance in Halloween Ends? No, he will not. I don't know what's going on, honestly, with Jason Voorhees. I think the whole Friday the 13th thing is stuck in legal limbo. I think there's some kind of issue going on with who owns the rights to it, and that's why we haven't had a new Friday the 13th movie in years. So I don't even know if they could legally use them even if they wanted to. Probably not. Rizzo with the $20 super chat drop. What's going on, Rizzo? I honestly forgot that NXT had women's tag team titles. Also, Solo Monster, I don't know if you remember, but I tagged you on Twitter about buying Magic Spoon. My top three flavors are chocolate, frosted, and blueberry muffin. All are delicious. Look, I don't plug something if I think it tastes like shit, okay? Because my name and reputation is on the line here. I'm not going to go ahead and promote a product that I don't like myself. So when I tell you that Magic Spoon tastes good, you could take that to the bank. In fact, I'm going to be promoting something new next week that I actually fucking love. We're going to be starting to work together on that next week. So I'm very happy that you are enjoying your Magic Spoon. And I would advise everybody to get that $5 off when you use our link. MagicSpoon.com/Solomonster. Get yourself $5 off. You could be as happy as old Rizzo over here. EJ Slam, today I put a poll in the Facebook group asking who is Mr. SummerSlam. So far with 10 votes, 70% Bret Hart, 30% Brock Lesnar. The answer is Bret Hart. Brock has had some great SummerSlam matches too, but Bret Hart is Mr. SummerSlam. I've said it before. Bret Hart is Mr. SummerSlam. Randy Orton, I don't know about recent years, but Randy Orton I thought was also always Mr. Survivor Series. I had John Cena as Mr. Royal Rumble, and I had, obviously, Shawn Michaels was Mr. WrestleMania. That's how I would break it down. Bryant Finley, this show stunk tonight. King against Allen, Starks promo, and FTR promo were good. Blackpool Combat Club should have bulldozed Best Friends. Swerve and Lee segment was terrible. Yeah, I mean, it was like something out of Monday Night Raw. I mean, that was their way, I guess, of getting them on the show, but I just didn't like it. The artist formerly known as Natural Born Thriller says, did you watch William Regal's podcast with his thoughts about Chris Benoit? It sounded very interesting. I did not watch the entire podcast. Let me just see here. The Coug, I want to make sure I see the Coug. I see your message. It says, a big thank you for that El Santo, Blue Demon, and Mil Máscara shout out on your podcast. They are my childhood heroes. La Lucha Libre Real. Yeah, I was talking about Rey Mysterio because they're doing the whole 20 years of Rey Mysterio thing on Raw this Monday at Madison Square Garden. And, you know, I'm sensitive to the fact that if you call him the greatest luchador of all time, which some people say that Rey Mysterio is, you know, the greatest or one of the greatest luchadors of all time. You know, if it matters that he never really, you know, made that name so much in Mexico as much as he did here in the States, but you're also neglecting the names that I mentioned on the show, like Mil Máscara and El Santo and Blue Demon and Dos Caras. And I mean, there's a whole bunch of legends who I'm sure people would probably rank above Rey Mysterio. So I think Rey is one of the GOATs. I do. He, blazed the trail that very few have. He was one of those once-in-a-lifetime performers the first time you watched him. But you can't ignore the fact that there were, I mean, culturally, there were so many stars that were far bigger than Rey Mysterio who came out of Mexico in Lucha Libre. So, anyway, that's why I mentioned those names on the podcast on Sunday. But to go back to the Super Chat, I watched one of the clips. I did not watch the entire podcast. I watched one of the clips where he did talk about Benoit and actually talked about what happened on the Benoit tribute show when they brought him into the room to, you know, on that Benoit episode of Raw where everybody said, you know, something nice about Chris Benoit. I did not know this. And this was the first time I had heard Regal talk about the fact that as he was going into the room to sit down and speak, JBL had just did his little testimonial, and JBL was coming out. And JBL just made a comment to Regal and said, it was something to the effect of, like, do you think it's possible that he did it? Or something like that. And Regal was shocked because he hadn't thought about it like that. Right? He was still just kind of numb from the news. And he's literally walking into the room to sit down and talk about Chris Benoit. And that one comment from JBL made him stop and think, knowing what he knew about Benoit. Because he used to be very close with him. And whatever it was, you know, Regal's wife one day said that that man is never to be in our home. And they basically, they were still friendly, but they were not as close after that as they used to be. That got Regal thinking, like, wait a minute. I hadn't even entertained the idea that maybe he killed them. So when Regal sat down to talk, if you remember what he said, there'll be a later date where I can tell you all the things I want to tell you about Chris Benoit, but I feel like right now would not be the time to do that, because in his mind, he thought maybe he was responsible for what happened. So I didn't know the whole sequence of events that as it was JBL coming out, making that comment, that made Regal stop and say, wait a minute, maybe I shouldn't go and heap all this praise on Chris. Maybe I should kind of wait and reserve judgment. And unfortunately, that turned out to be a pretty smart decision on his part. Oh, we got 420 Baked Chicken. Should I legit pay for Flair's last match or borrow it? The promo kind of sold me. Lethal, the grandpa beater. I love the part where Jarrett just smacked the shit out of him. Just smacked him right across. And it made that thwack. You know, it made that sound. Flair is out of his fucking mind. The way that he bled in that one video package, he's in the parking lot laying on the ground bleeding. Guy's out of his mind. Should you pay for it or borrow it? I don't know. It depends on your financial situation. How about this? How about you borrow it and you drop a super chat that night on the review? How about that? Save your money, drop a super chat when we're hanging out that night. You can borrow it. I like that plan better. Food Hive. If Halloween Kills doesn't have Eddie Munson, then it is a fail. It's Halloween Ends, not Halloween Kills. You missed Halloween Kills came out last year. Where have you been? And Remastered Ed with the $9.99. Why do you think Ken Shamrock was never WWE champion? Was he a little too early for his time? Especially since how Vince has been booking Brock after he left the UFC. Yeah, I think in a lot of ways, Shamrock, he was kind of ahead of his time, I think. But Shamrock, I mean, he had been wrestling going back to, I think, the late 80s. I think when he debuted as a wrestler, I think it was 89, 90, maybe it was somewhere around there. And then he went and did the Ultimate Fighting, and then came back to wrestling, and then went back to fighting. Why was he never the champion? It just wasn't the right time. He only first joined the company in 97. So, he improved. I actually think Shamrock was very good. Shamrock was more than capable. He had a style that worked for him. And should he have been WWF champion? No, it wasn't the right time. I think a different time, you could have booked him like a killer. But I think that you got to consider the time period. You had Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart, right? That whole thing. And then Bret left and Shawn had the title and they were getting Steve Austin ready. So could Shamrock have had a program with Austin? It's possible, but it would have been crazy to put the belt on Shamrock as hot as Austin was. And he was starting, you know, to really take off. And then Rock got hot. Rock took over and it just wasn't the right time. I think it was more timing than anything else. And once Shamrock started losing matches, just like any other guy on the roster, I mean, you're right. If it was Vince McMahon today, Shamrock would be appearing once every 3 months and he would never lose. Because he's the UFC guy, right? He comes in with that credibility. But back then, I mean, look at the roster they had, you know? There were a lot of other guys who were far more over than Ken Shamrock. It wouldn't have been the right time. Funny, I just answered a question about Shamrock on the podcast on Sunday. I got a question about why WWE has seemingly, it feels like they've blackballed the guy. And I talked about that, and if you want to hear my answer, what I think is going on there, then you can go back and check out episode 765 from this past Sunday. It's in the mailbag. It is crazy to me. I mean, for all the documentaries and stuff, even just as like a talking head or something, you know, he was part of the most popular era in the history of that company. Shamrock was not, you know, one of the top five most important parts of the Attitude Era, but he was part of the Attitude Era. And he did wrestle all of those guys. He wrestled Austin. He wrestled Rock. He wrestled Undertaker. He wrestled Vader. He wrestled Jericho. He wrestled Mankind. He worked with all those guys. Bulldog. I mean, why not have him back and do stuff with him? I don't know. JM, over under, two more final matches for Ric Flair. Oh, at least. Are you kidding me? This match next weekend, it's just going to give him the itch. It's going to give him the itch. This is a guy who has talked before about wanting to die in the ring. If I'm going to die, it's going to be in the ring or it's going to be on top of a woman. That's why when they first announced this, I said, why don't you put him in the ring with Tessa Blanchard? That way you can kill two birds with one stone. Do an intergender match. They didn't do it. I think that's a missed opportunity. That's right. Yes, I forgot. Shamrock was in the union. Remember when Vince McMahon joined the union? Vince McMahon joining the union. That was back in 99. Yeah, the union lasted about as long as Apple did. Rizzo, thank you for the 10 spot, man. That's awesome. Rizzo dropping a lot of love here on the stream tonight. That means a lot to me. I feel like July has been, I don't know. June was like a really big month, and July has been, I don't want to say dead, but definitely down. And it's frustrating to me. It's pissing me off. Because I look at that as a failure on my part. What am I doing wrong? I'm obviously doing something wrong. And I beat myself up over it, trying to figure it out. I don't know. When I see support like that, I appreciate that. It means more than you know. It is getting hot in here, I will say, because I turned the air conditioner off right before I went live. We are in the middle of a heat. This whole country is in the middle. The whole world is in the middle of a heat wave. I saw there was an airport over in the UK somewhere where the planes couldn't land because the runway melted. The tarmac, I guess, melted down. So this is not just a New York problem, but we are in the middle of what is going to be, I think, 7 or 8 straight days of 90 degrees plus here in New York. This is only day two. I'm just hoping the power stays on. We had a blackout 3 years ago. That was awful. But I figured, all right, it's cool in here. I'll turn the AC off. I mean, 2 minutes after I turned it off, and I'm like baking in here. I feel like a baked bean sitting here. You can cook an egg on my head. Hopefully, wherever you are, it's not as hot. If it is, I hope you guys are staying cool and staying safe. Rizzo, dropping another $20 super chat. Says, I wasn't looking forward to the Flair match, and then I saw the clip, and Lethal and Jarrett sold me, but to me, they are the baby faces and not Flair. Also, laughed out loud when Flair said, that's where I had my surgery. Yeah, when he got hit in the gut. Yeah, you know, I don't see how anybody can... Now, Flair loves being a heel, so this is all by design. I mean, it's playing out exactly the way that he wants. But I don't see how anybody can watch that video and the way Flair was talking to Jay Lethal and everything. Flair comes off as a complete fucking dick in that video. So you would walk away from watching that, right? These two guys are beating up the senior citizen in a parking lot. I mean, how are Jarrett and Jay Lethal not going to walk into Nashville and be anything but heels, right? It's Flair's last match. Everybody's going to cheer for him. He's going to walk on water on that pay-per-view. But in that video to promote the main event, he just came across like a complete dick. He said to Jay Lethal, he goes, because Jay Lethal wanted to get booked. He was like fucking Dennis Stamp. I'm not booked, right? From Beyond the Mat. With Terry Funk. Terry, I'm not booked. All Jay Lethal wanted was to be booked on the Ric Flair final show. And he kept hounding Flair, and Flair was like, I'm sorry, there's only so many spots, and frankly, you weren't a big enough name. I'm like, what an asshole. This guy was the Ring of Honor world champion. Then again, there's no love lost with Ric Flair in Ring of Honor. That's a whole other story. All the money that he owed Kerry Silkin. That he screwed him out of. But boy, you know, Jeff Jarrett, I don't know, man. This guy keeps getting gigs. He's got the podcast thing with Conrad. He just got a big cushy executive position in WWE. He's just been named the special referee next weekend at SummerSlam for the tag team title match. And the very next night, he's going to walk in and beat the hell out of Ric Flair. Right? He was on that big GCW pay-per-view at the beginning of the year against Effie. And he beat Effie. Effie never got his win back. Old Double J, man. It's all that Global Force gold. It's like his infinity gauntlet. It gives him power. I don't know how he keeps doing it. Yeah, Juan, you better be buying my mug. Again, you want to get mugged. Here it is. Double-sided, by the way. Double-sided. Go to thesolemonster.com. You'll see the link tree, the very last link on the bottom. It says get mug. You can buy the mug. You can pick whatever mug you want, too. You get a small one, a big one. Food Hive with the $9.99. Cody's my wrestler of the year. Put over Sammy in a 5-star match. Return of the year at WrestleMania. Legendary performance with a torn pec. Got another 5 stars. Tonight, he won an ESPY. Did he? Did Cody Rhodes win an ESPY award tonight? I did not know that. Cody is going to be, I think, topping many lists as wrestler of the year. What hurts him is the fact that he got hurt and he's going to miss the rest of the year. So is that enough? Is the first half of the year enough to carry him as the wrestler of the year? It's too early to answer that question, but I think he'll definitely be on a lot of people's lists. Did I ever watch Avatar or The Last Airbender? No. Didn't see either one of them. Am I going to talk about the Effie incident this week? No. No. I have no interest in talking about that. Preston Ridiculous. It's my birthday. Love the channel. Well, everybody, drop some birthday emojis in the chat for Preston Ridiculous. Happy birthday, brother. I hope you got a cake to the face, just like Smart Mark did on Dynamite tonight. Cody is the only wrestler who can miss half a year and top multiple Wrestler of the Year awards. Rizzo with the 10 spot. I also think that the PLE schedule for WWE has been an adjustment. Like Money in the Bank was on July 4th. Also, Money in the Bank and SummerSlam were on UFC pay-per-view nights as well. You know, that's right. Is that the case? I believe it is. SummerSlam is on the same night as the next UFC show. Is that the case? I believe so. Usually they would try to avoid the UFC nights. So we all see how that worked out, by the way, for Money in the Bank. We all see how that worked out. They had to move out of the stadium. And then because of UFC, when they wanted to run the T-Mobile Arena, they couldn't. So they ran the smaller building. Meanwhile, I think they should run that building more often, because that crowd for Money in the Bank was hot, hot, hot. And I think there's something to be said for those smaller buildings with the acoustics and everything. Although I still feel like AEW should be running the United Center and not the Now Arena for All Out. But I've already stated my opinion on that. Spicy Dry Chicken, Danhausen Special. I shall curse you during Be the Booker. And Food Hive, all of the WOTY have been hurt for some time this year. Oh, Wrestler of the Year. I don't know. I was like, what? I'm trying to figure out what that. I know what MOTY is. I'm like, what is WOTY? I'm like, Wrestler of the Year. Couldn't imagine what he was talking about. Shinakuma, I'm having fun tonight with all of you. Well, I'm happy to hear that. That's why we do this. It's all about having fun. Doesn't matter if you had a good day. Doesn't matter if you had a bad day. Get to hang out here for a little bit with everybody and have a good time. As long as you're having a good time, then that makes me happy. AEW should run the Hammerstein Ballroom one of these days, or even the 2300 Arena in Philly. What did I hear recently? Somebody, I think, is planning to run Hammerstein. I don't know if it's... Is it AEW or... I don't remember. I have to go back and check. It might be AEW. AEW might be actually planning a Hammerstein show. I mean, it's a no-brainer to me. It's a great venue for them to run. I don't see why they wouldn't do it. All right, let's be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
I will get to the other super chats here in just a second, so you can send them on in if you want to. But right now, we have to book a few matches here. You know, Tony Khan is booking so many cards, right? He had a hand in booking the Forbidden Door with New Japan last month. He's booking Dynamite and Rampage every week. He's booking a Ring of Honor pay-per-view for this weekend. So I got to get in on this myself. I got to get in on some of this booking. So we'll start with the men. Sala Monster should be in Be the Booker. How do you know I'm not? We begin with Bo Dallas. That is one of my all-time favorite NXT moments right there on that screen. Bo Dallas holding on for dear life to the ring post as he is being pulled away by security and escorted out of the building. I still laugh. I still smile when I think back to that segment. It does make me miss those old days of NXT. Bo Dallas. I wonder what he's up to. I wonder if he's planning on wrestling again. You gotta believe it's going to be Bo Dallas one-on-one with the Brooklyn Brawler. I'm trying to think, what show would I even put that on? Would that even be a match that you would put on, like, the syndicated shows back in the day? Or I feel like that's a non-televised house show match. That's pretty bad. Look at this, the Brooklyn Brawler. I mean, from my neck of the woods here, and he's wearing a Yankees shirt. If it was Mets, at least I'd have a little respect for him. But look at this guy, wearing a Yankees shirt. He's not the Bronx Brawler, he's the Brooklyn Brawler. Let's do the women's Be the Booker, and we begin with Velvet Sky. You can hear Velvet Sky every week on NWA Power on YouTube. She is part of the announce team. Velvet Sky, the former Ms. Bully Ray, but no longer, is going to go one-on-one with Santina Marella. Boy, we are really struggling tonight. I'm in a competition with myself to see how bad it can get. What the fuck? What is going on? What is going on here? Certainly we have to redeem ourselves with the tag teams. Please tell me. Well, look, it's former WWF Tag Team Champions, Los Conquistadors. And it will be Los Conquistadors stepping into the ring with the Rockers. I'm going to give them the bell. I'm going to give them the bell because the Conquistadors are two of the greatest wrestlers of all time. And the Rockers back in the day, I think, would have given us a hell of a match. We had to win one. I couldn't have all three be losers. What you're seeing, by the way, on your screen is the infamous night where the Rockers won the tag team titles, which didn't last very long before they had them taken away from them. So this image that you see on your screen right now, this doesn't exist. This never happened. Never happened. Be calm, see clearly with the $2 super chat. Top five most underappreciated wrestlers right now. I still think Claudio is very underappreciated. And I think he's going to show people how underappreciated he's been in the ring with Jonathan Gresham this Saturday. So, Claudio, you're going to make me put together a list of underappreciated. Claudio's going to be on that list. As far as who else underappreciated? I don't know. I mean, look, Dolph Ziggler is feuding now with Austin Theory. Now, we know how good Dolph is, right? Dolph is very talented, and Dolph is being put in this position for one very specific reason, not because Dolph is being pushed, but because Dolph is good and a good tool for Vince McMahon to use in trying to get other people over and trying to give other people some of the best matches that they could possibly have. That's why they used him with Bron Breakker in NXT. That's why they're using him with Austin Theory now. People shit on Ziggler, though, and I sometimes shit on Ziggler because I'm just sick of seeing him, right? I mean, he's been around for so long. He's been pushed, then he doesn't get pushed. He's been pushed, then he doesn't get pushed. And you want to get behind him, and then they cut his legs off. And I mean, this has been the story of Dolph Ziggler now going back for a decade. But I do think he's probably on that list of underappreciated because he is very good. Even though I might be sick of seeing him, he's, you know, I think he's got value. He still brings value to the roster, and I think he is underappreciated by a lot of people who have given up on him and who are probably sick and tired of seeing him on their TV screen. So you can make an argument that Dolph Ziggler should be on that list of underappreciated talents. You know, there's a lot of really talented guys on the AEW roster who are not getting a whole lot of attention right now. I don't know if I'd consider them underappreciated, but I don't know. Those are two of the names that come to mind when I think of underappreciated. Ah, Chad Gable. Yes. Yes. I'm sad that I forgot to even mention him, but that just goes to show you how low on the totem pole he really is. Chad Gable is fucking great. And I don't think Chad Gable is nearly as appreciated as he should be. I saw that Kurt Angle wants Chad Gable to play him in a biopic, if they make a movie about his life, which I don't know if they are or not, but I guess he was talking about it on his podcast. And he said he would like Chad Gable to play him. JM with the $5. You're booking the women worse than Tony Khan. I know. It's a disgrace is what it is. Every time I take that women's Be the Booker for a spin, I have no idea. But I just shudder to even look what I'm going to land on. We got over 160 women in there. For some reason, I just cannot book the women for shit. Somebody mentioned Corbin, Baron Corbin, as being underappreciated. And Corbin is in bed, in the ring. I just can't stand him when I see him on my TV. Unless he's broke and, you know, begging for change on the street. And he's entertaining. How did everyone back then like Santina? Nobody liked Santina. The answer is they didn't. And if they say they did, they're lying. Pillow v. Pillow. $6 super chat. Do you plan to see Jordan Peele's Nope? Yeah, I mean, hopefully it won't be very long. It'll be out, you know, on demand or on Hulu or Netflix or something, and I'll see. I'm not planning to go to the theater to see it, but I will watch it. I enjoyed his last two movies. In fact, I saw that I think even the new movie now has a pretty high rating on Rotten Tomatoes. It's just interesting because I think the last three movies, including this new one, I think are all like 88% and above. So, there's a lot of people who like his movies because they're really good. And because the first two of his that I saw, I thought were so great, he's become one of those directors who, when he comes out with something new, it gets my attention. And I trust that, you know, he's, you know, done a good job with it, and therefore I will watch it. So, I'm looking forward to seeing it. I just don't know when I will be doing so, but I will definitely be watching it. Bryant Finley, why do you have a man in the women's booking draw? That's Santina. I don't know what you're talking about, brother. That's Santina Marella. That ain't no man. Don't be disgracing the good name of Santina Marella. Yeah, how was season one of Chucky? I still haven't watched it yet. I know season two is coming out. Food Hive. I will literally send you $50 if you review Nope. I might review Nope. So I'm going to hold you to that. But I don't know when I'm going to see it. I think it comes out tomorrow, right? Yeah, I mean, I'm so fucking busy these next 2 weeks. I'm just, it's going to be a little while before I'm able to see it. What was the best women's Be the Booker that I did so far? Oh, I don't remember. We had a few good ones. We had a few pretty good ones. I just don't remember what they were. I think one of them involved Becky Lynch. I just don't remember what the match was. Yeah, Nope is Friday, or the 22nd. Yeah, I thought it came out on Friday. All right, guy. I think I'm all caught up now on your questions. Again, quick reminder here, actually something I didn't even mention that some of you may not be aware of because some of you may not hit that bell for notifications and you need to do that. Make sure your notifications are on so that way when a new video goes up, you'll be alerted. I have a couple of new shorts, Solid Monster shorts here on the YouTube channel. I've been experimenting with them. So there's two of them up, including my thoughts on the Halloween Ends trailer. I put that one up earlier. And it's very appropriate because I reviewed the last two Halloween movies on this channel, and I'm sure I'll review the third one, so why not put up a Halloween video? So check out those shorts, but also don't forget to check out the latest Sound Off Gamer. You got a lot of different types of content hitting the channel, and this is one of them here. This is the heel turn that you didn't see come. Fuck that Anna Jay bullshit tonight, the Anna Jay heel turn. Oh my God, she turned heel. Fuck that noise. This is right here. This is the heel turn that you did not see coming. Solid Monster has had enough of these fickle fucking fans. And he made a new friend. He made a new friend. You can watch it all play out on the latest Sound Off Gamer. That's My Rise episode number 8. That is currently up on the channel as we speak. And again, don't forget that we are on TikTok now. I have it pinned in the chat. You could also find the link in the description down below. Not a lot there right now, but the first two videos are up there. And we'll try to build a little audience on there as well. I've had a lot of people asking me about TikTok and suggesting it. And from doing these YouTube shorts over the last few days and then finally setting things up on TikTok, I realized that YouTube shorts is literally just a copy of TikTok. Or maybe TikTok is a copy of YouTube shorts. I don't know. They're all copying each other, basically. They're all the same shit. It's all the same shit. It's all the same. But anyway, follow me on there. I will be back with you live on Friday. Right, Friday. SmackDown and Rampage. And then on Saturday night for the Ring of Honor Death Before Dishonor recap. And then, of course, episode 766 drops on Sunday. And then we have a very busy week coming up of content next week. So, thank you for all the support tonight. And I will see you guys back here very soon. Be well, stay safe, stay cool in the heat. And much love to all of you. Take care, guys.